Support for this public radio podcast comes from KeyBank Capital Markets, specializing in corporate and investment banking solutions for established and growing mid-sized companies. Visit key.com/KBCM. And by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world. Online at shrm.org. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, managing nearly $9 billion in municipal bond assets. Details at putnam.com. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
What we really ought to do is just run a tape of the show from a month ago, or the month before that, or the month before that, because the housing news isn't changing. Homes aren't selling, prices are falling, and yet somehow people are thinking they can make money on mortgages. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. Marketplace entrepreneurship reporting is supported by Lenovo, official computer partner of the Olympic Games. Lenovo dedicates 1% of income to support entrepreneurship and social ventures worldwide.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Today is Friday, the 23rd of May. Great to have you with us, everybody. Maybe you didn't know this, but there are two categories of single-family homes in this country, new and what they call previously owned. Used just doesn't work, I guess. Anyway, sales of those previously owned homes fell again in April, the eighth month out of the last nine that has happened. Since they're not selling, prices are falling. It'd take almost a year to sell off what's on the market right now. A year is just about as long as the credit squeeze has been going on, a crisis driven in large part by the questionable financing that drove the housing bubble, mortgage-backed securities. Banks and brokers have been running away from those depreciating assets as fast as they can. Now, though, a highly respected bond manager is betting he'll be able to cash in, and Marketplace's Bob Moon reports he's counting on the government to make sure his gamble pays off.
When the manager of the world's biggest bond fund, Bill Gross, triples his holdings in mortgage debt in just a few months, investors take notice. Gross's $130 billion PIMCO Total Return Fund is now 60% full of mortgage-backed securities. He says he's being careful to buy high-quality mortgage bonds from government-backed institutions, not what he calls the subprime garbage. In other words, with taxpayers implicitly guaranteeing mortgages from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, how can this bet fail? At Federated Investors, senior portfolio manager Todd Abraham agrees. He says a bet against these kinds of mortgages is essentially a bet against the Federal Reserve, which has made it clear it's backing the credit markets.
The likelihood of them allowing them to fail is really very, very low. There's that notion that something is too large to fail, and I think that might be applicable in this case.
It was Gross who astutely anticipated the housing market downturn and sold out of his mortgage holdings before the plunge. With housing prices still falling, there's no guarantee the mortgage mess is nearing an end. But Morningstar analyst Paul Herbert says Gross knows what he's doing.
This is an area where the risks aren't so great compared to the additional compensation over treasuries because of the government guarantee, and also because these borrowers are in better shape than the subprime borrowers we've heard so much about.
As Herbert sees it, there's been enough of a shakeout in the mortgage market to find a few of the shinier coins left on the ground. And that's what Gross and other savvy investors are now picking up. In Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
The Food and Drug Administration's trying something new. It wants to make extra sure the drugs and medical devices on the market now really ought to be there. So to sniff out possible safety problems, the FDA is going to start mining millions of medical records. Not yours, but maybe the ones your hospital has. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has more.
Everybody thinks the initiative is a great idea, but this is a common refrain.
It will take a lot of work.
Dr. Bruce Pasady teaches medicine at the University of Washington.
This is not going to be something where you can go to the computer and in 2 minutes say, this drug is associated with this and we need to act on it.
The FDA starts pilot projects using Medicare data in a month, but the initiative, called Sentinel, will be rolled out over many months. There'll be challenges, how to convince hospitals to start using the same terms. Some write out defibrillator, while others just write defib. That confuses computers. Some hospitals still use paper records. And how do you pinpoint that a drug or medical device really caused a common heart attack? And when do you warn consumers? George Washington University epidemiologist David Michaels says drug companies won't want to rush to judgment,
because they don't want to scare patients from taking these particular drugs. On the other hand, consumer advocates say, we want to know as quickly as possible if there's some potential problem out there.
The FDA had been relying on doctors to report patients' side effects. It was a slow process. The consumer groups complained that it allowed dangerous drugs to stay on the market too long. FDA scientist Rachel Behrman says that won't be a problem with the Sentinel initiative.
Sentinel will provide us with a very quick tool, method to push information out.
How much that information push will cost is unknown. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Even if you're not part of the half-calf, double-shot, extra-hot latte crowd, you probably know Starbucks is facing some venti-sized problems. Among the biggest is competition from McDonald's. When Mickey D's announced not too long ago it was introducing specialty coffees, observers guessed it would suck up a good portion of the market. But Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports McDonald's coffee sales haven't gotten the caffeinated jolt that many expected.
McDonald's has been test marketing its new cappuccinos and lattes in Michigan and Kansas City.
It appears that the results haven't fully lived up to expectations.
That's Bob Golden, a food industry consultant with Technomic. He says despite local advertising and promotion, McDonald's specialty coffees haven't been as popular as some analysts expected. Some franchise owners have griped about the expense of the new machines and building renovations. Their share could be upwards of $20,000. Again, Bob Golden.
Franchisees want a quick payback on their investment, so if things are indeed not quite where they had hoped they would be, discontent is inevitable.
But he says it's way too early to dismiss McDonald's. The company has yet to roll out its specialty coffee national advertising campaign. Consumers may be slow, but analysts say they're likely to come around. Tom Perko is president of Bevmark, a beverage industry consulting company.
Even though we're talking about a beverage, we're really talking about an image. And McDonald's is in the process of looking to upgrade its image.
McDonald's has already siphoned off some of Starbucks' business with its lower-priced regular coffee. And with the fast food chain charging about 30% less for its cappuccinos, Perko is confident that it can attract high-end coffee drinkers, too.
They've taken on Starbucks, and I think over the long term, they'll take a nice big chunk out of that business.
Coffee retailers aren't the only ones who should worry. Next, McDonald's plans to roll out its own line of smoothies. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Crude rose $1.38 today, closed just over $132 a barrel, which reminds me to mention that if you have travel plans, you ought to book your tickets right now. Hot on the heels of American's announcement earlier this week that it's charging extra for the first checked bag, all three big carriers, that'd be American, United, and Delta, have bumped up their fuel surcharges in just the past 24 hours. United's is the biggest, $60 round trip on flights over 750 miles. Oil and the housing report didn't exactly spread joy on the equity markets today. We will have the details and the whole shaky week on Wall Street when we do the numbers. The news today that the Burmese junta has decided to allow all foreign aid workers into the country is good news on the face of it. Or perhaps it's a sign of how bad things really are getting there. In China, the official death toll from the earthquake almost 2 weeks ago is now above 55,000. Relief workers in both countries are coping with a blizzard of complications, from finding shelter and transporting food to supplying clean water. Most often, it's NGOs and governments that take the lead in providing that kind of aid. But they're increasingly being helped by businesses, big and small. From the Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk, Stacey Vanek-Smith reports.
You can see how filthy this is. I mean, no human being would even dream of drinking it.
Bob Salter pours gritty brown water into a soft-sided plastic pouch. He's the CEO of Hydration Technologies in Oregon. The pouch is called an X-Pack. It uses plant cellulose to filter contamination out of the water.
Quite tasty, actually.
Salter's main client is the military, but he's shifting his focus to humanitarian aid. He says there's more opportunity there. Nearly 6,000 people die every day because of a lack of access to clean water, and the global market for water technology is expected to balloon to $600 billion by 2015. Naomi Klein is the author of The Shock Doctrine, The Rise of Disaster Capitalism. In her book, she criticizes governments and companies that take advantage of crises to achieve their own ends. But she says there's nothing nothing wrong with companies profiting from products that help alleviate suffering.
I don't think there is an ethical problem in seeing crisis as opportunity. Most of these crises are telling us something, that our economic system needs more regulation. We've had a bubble that's burst, and it's telling us that climate change is a reality. We need to heed these crises, and of course, we need to respond.
More and more for-profit companies are responding. John MacArthur is CEO of Millennium Promise, a nonprofit committed to fighting poverty. He says corporations excel in finding workable solutions to existing problems.
Companies have a lot of assets, a lot of talents, a lot of skills, often a lot of technologies, and we see that those technologies and skills can make incredible contributions when deployed on the most pressing problems.
MacArthur points to cell phone giant Sony Ericsson bringing internet access to remote regions, drug maker Novartis developing malaria medicine, and Sumitomo Chemicals treated malaria nets. And it's not just big businesses getting involved. Mikkel Vestergaard-Franzen is the CEO of a Geneva-based company that makes a variety of disaster relief products.
Entrepreneurs have a can-do attitude that is highly needed to develop new tools, new ideas, new innovations.
So far, Vestergaard-Franzen's best-selling product is a malaria net, but it's the need for clean water that is driving entrepreneurs like him to produce some of the most interesting innovations. Vestergaard-Franzen recently developed the Life Straw. You can stick the 12-inch tube into the filthiest river or lake and suck out clean water. In the last couple of weeks, aid organizations have ordered more than 40,000 Life Straws to send to Myanmar and China.
We manage very well to combine doing business with doing good. Our entire concept, which we refer to as humanitarian entrepreneurship, is focused on the strategic alignment between corporate objectives and development goals.
Insert the filter into the can.
Hydration Technologies' Bob Salter says he's finding all sorts of benefits from that alignment. He says he and his employees are much more motivated and excited about their jobs.
There are financial considerations in any business. You need to stay alive, but at the same time, it's tremendously rewarding if you can help people in crisis. It's great to be able to do both.
Salter says it's been a magnet for investors, too. He says venture capitalists get very excited about the company's humanitarian goals, so much so that they are often willing to take smaller profits than when his company was developing products for the military. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Time to check the week on Wall Street with stockbroker and business analyst David Johnson down in Dallas, Texas. David, how are you, my friend?
Oh, I'm just hoping you guys don't shoot the messenger.
I'm sorry. You're in the business. It's your fault. So line up against the wall.
Yeah, this was a rough week. You look at the numbers. You say, well, Dow was down 500 points. Of course it was. Well, we've been through that before. But this was there was a little capitulation this week that I hadn't seen before.
Wait, because that was the rare note of negativity coming from David Johnson.
No way, that's not true. And I was a little negative last week, and I told you, I said, this oil business is beginning to get to us. Mm-hmm. But this week it really did. I mean, the obvious levels, you know, we mentioned last week the restaurants and stuff like that. And
yep.
Then, did you see the airlines? But these guys are priced, these are below hat size.
Yeah. Well, you know, anytime Americans taking planes out of the sky, what are you going to do, right?
Well, but, you know, because of what American was saying, I mean, the message from American was very clear, is it is cheaper for us to pay the interest and the fees and the carrying charges for having these airplanes on the ground than it is for us to have them in the air. But no, what I'm talking about is that the B word is back again.
The B word?
Yeah, the B word.
Help me.
Bankruptcy.
Oh, yeah.
At $4.18 on U.S. Air, down $1.04 today. United Airlines, $7.52. Delta, $5.50, down 27 cents.
Hang on. You're an airline guy from way back. Let me ask you this. Would it be the worst thing in the world if we had some of these B things happening?
Well, I guess not. But you know, there's a balance here. You want these guys to make a buck. You really do. Because you want them around. You want the competition. Because I'm telling you, the other side of it is that everybody's going to run the government and say, you know what we need? we need some regulation in this industry. By golly, we need to re-regulate this industry. Yeah. Next thing you wake up and you got Aeroflot.
And we all know how that worked out.
So Ford, the big story around the country, nobody's buying SUVs, nobody's buying trucks. We cut our driving habits finally.
Mm-hmm.
So this was an interesting market. This was a market that just sat back and said, you know, we don't really know what to do here, but we really don't see anything that we like, and so we're just going to go through here and do some selling. Now, the flip side is this may open the door, and finally we'll start seeing some of these buys. You saw this story out today that maybe the Belgians were looking at buying Budweiser.
Yeah, yeah, beer. Yeah,
$46 billion. I don't know if that deal's going to go through, but we're going to hear more of those. And maybe that's the thing that'll perk things up. But right now, we need a good long weekend, and we need to pat each other on the back and say, this too will pass, like a kidney stone, but this too will pass.
David Johnson down in Dallas, Texas. Thank you, David. Yeah, what a lovely image to leave us with.
Oh, have man. A good weekend.
Coming up, you've heard of air guitar? Try air conductor, this time synthesizer included. But what you're doing here is you're waving your hands through these laser beams, right?
I'm kind of
and you're
pawing
calling
at it.
That music.
I'm pawing at it like a cat with a sprinkler.
It'll all make sense, I promise. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials moved down 0.1% today, 145 points to close at 12,479. The NASDAQ dropped 0.8%, 19 points, 2444. The number, the S&P 500, subtracted 0.3%, 18 points, ended the day at 1376. For the week that was, the Dow plunged almost 4%. The NASDAQ finished 0.3% lower. The S&P 500 tumbled 3.5%. Homebuilders got hammered on that housing data. KB Home crumbled 4.75%. Lennar and D.R. Horton each lost in the neighborhood of 2.5%. General Motors sputtered 4.5% lower to a 26-year low. Bonds rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note hit 3.85%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the Henry Luce Foundation, seeking to increase American understanding of East and Southeast Asia. And by Clarkson Potters, The Splendid Table's How to Eat Supper, the cookbook inspired by the radio program for people who love to eat. Available now. Whether you're busy or lounging around, the economic gears are always turning. Marketplace is available around the clock, too, as a podcast. Get your financial fix whenever you want it. Download the show and take it with you. Just head over to our website at marketplace.org and click on podcasts.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at the events for Monday. Break out the barbecue tongs and the suntan lotion. It's Memorial Day and the official start to summer fun. The Scripps-Howard National Spelling Bee continues in Washington, D.C. And on this day in 1896, Charles Dow publishes the first edition of the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Of the original Dow dozen, only GE remains as an intact company. I'm Megan Larson.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. These are dark days indeed for British Prime Minister Gordon Brown. During the 10 years that Brown ran the Exchequer, the Treasury Department, basically, for Tony Blair, he could do almost no wrong. Home prices soared, unemployment plummeted. But all that changed when he got the top job last summer. Today, Brown's reputation for economic competence is in tatters. His party has just suffered a crushing defeat in a special parliamentary election, and even some of his own supporters are calling for his head. From London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
Edward Timpson won yesterday's special election for the Conservatives. He has no doubts about why he snatched what had been a safe Labour seat. Here's what he told his supporters.
You have sent a message, loud and clear, that Gordon Brown just does not get it, and the government needs to change.
Britain's Labour Prime Minister Gordon Brown insists he does get it. After yesterday's defeat, he acknowledged the economic worries of the British people.
We have a problem because of rising oil prices, with food prices, with gas and electricity prices. The message of the British public is clear and unequivocal. They want us to address these challenges, and I believe that I can do so.
Most of the public does not. Three-quarters think he's not up to the job of steering the UK through its current economic slowdown. His reputation has been shattered by many setbacks, among them the run on the British bank Northern Rock last fall. Brown is often accused of dithering. Graham Stringer, a Labour Member of Parliament, says his Cabinet colleagues have got to turf him out as party leader.
I think now the responsibility is up to some senior members of the Cabinet actually to say things are going very badly wrong. We want to win the next general election and put themselves forward to be selected as the leader of the Labour Party.
When he was finance chief, Gordon Brown claimed full credit for the boom. Now there's a slowdown. He's blaming it on the global economy. But increasingly, the public and some members of his own party are blaming him. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Today, the final installment of our series featuring young economists. We've asked three of them the same simple question. Why? When curious Gen Yers can do almost anything they want, why subject yourself to a whole lot of number crunching and cost-benefit analyses? Commentator and economics graduate student Ben Bishong says these days, economics is so much more.
Growing up, I wanted to be something interesting and exciting, like an astronaut or a doctor. I never even considered pursuing economics. The idea of poring over numbers and stats for hours a day didn't really pique my interest, and I actually failed high school economics. But once I got up to higher levels, I found in economics a fascinating and dynamic field. Behavior is immensely complicated, and as economists, we try to boil it down to one or two simple equations. And increasingly, we're utilizing new and innovative techniques to ask some of life's most fundamental questions. For instance, instead of GDP numbers and labor statistics, I actually use brain activity to ask questions like, how do we choose to buy something? We now have the capacity to analyze hormone levels to measure trust between people, or utilize tools such as MRI imaging to figure out motives for giving to charity, or even gene sequencing to look at the genetic basis for altruism. We're using ideas developed by psychologists, sociologists, and political scientists. All of this allows us to examine these questions in nearly limitless ways. With the economy the way it is right now, people might wonder why I focus on something like brain activity. It's one thing to examine how and why the price of food has spiraled out of control, but quite another to be able to use MRI scans to predict which foods a person will buy. To me, current economic policies aren't based on this solid understanding of people's behavior. For instance, in a down economy like we have now, we often see proposals for the expansion of social welfare services. But in order to tailor those policies correctly, shouldn't economists consider the thoughts and feelings of people who receive these types of aid? These new techniques can allow us to probe these questions. And it's questions like these that motivate me to study economics and hopefully build models that make sense for all sorts of seemingly odd behavior, including my own.
Ben Bishong is a doctoral candidate in economics at the California Institute of Technology. What did you want to do when you were growing up? You can let us know or tell us what you think of the program. It's marketplace.org. Click on contact. Activision said this week it's adding drums, a bass guitar, and a microphone to Guitar Hero. That's its hit video game. The company's hoping that'll snag a few more fans from MTV's rival Rock Band, both of which, by the way, you've heard played on this program. Creating toys for musical amateurs, like me, is big business, and new offerings are coming out every day. Sharper Image, which it ought to be mentioned, is hosting a bankruptcy auction of its assets next week, has one of its own. G4's Kevin Pereira is here to talk about another way for me to embarrass myself on the radio. Kevin, what is this thing?
If I can't bring a product here that puts you in a compromising position, I am not a fan of it anymore.
And neither are the listeners, I'm sure.
Introducing the Beams, Kai, B-E-A-M-Z, because yeah. It's extreme, so you have to spell it with a Z. It's a $600
Ooh.
Infrared laser light-activated sound device, I guess.
Describe this thing.
You have to. It's straight out of the future. It's the finest plastic polymers that money can buy.
Yeah.
It's basically a grid of six laser beams arranged 3x3.
Yeah.
You plug the device into your computer via USB. It's powered that way. You select a song using the Beam software, and whenever you put a hand, a finger, or any household object through the pathway of a beam, You get some music.
Wow, that's
some
cool.
Some mind-blowing 80s music.
Do it again.
All right, so here it is. Each song has a backing track that you can start and stop. We'll do a little house music, huh? And on the screen, I can see my samples.
He's dancing, and I am not doing
that. Oh, you have to. And then... Oh, what's going on there? That's a little sound sample.
But what you're doing here is you're waving your hands through these laser beams, right?
I'm kind of
and you're
pawing at it.
Calling that music.
I'm pawing at it like a cat with a sprinkler.
We will, I'm sure, in the next several moments, and much to my regret, get me playing this thing. The question, though, is who's going to pay $600 for this?
That's a question that I would hope someone at the Sharper Image asked during a boardroom
meeting. The retail outfit that is selling it.
Correct. I don't know. The bottom line, whenever I talk about this product, I say, listen, this product will drop in price. It will get to below $100. And at that point, you can maybe justify having one.
Right.
Or if you're a DJ and you want an interesting way to trigger samples for your next set, here you go. Just makes you want to move.
Wait, that's a drum thing, right?
There you go.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So now it comes preloaded with songs, any genre of music. We have bluegrass, we have children's music, we have death metal.
Oh, give me some bluegrass.
All right. How about a little? I actually love to hear you play death by metal. I know it's far from bluegrass, but I'd love to hear a little death by
metal.
Let's
see how it sounds.
That's Let's go 3 a.m. blues.
All right.
Let's go with that. Oh, leave your hand in there. Go for it.
Oh, I see.
I thought that was an amazing set. Probably the best 3 a.m. blues performance ever.
So as we talk about the people who are trying to foist this on an unsuspecting public, where does this go once it reaches below like $100? I mean, it'll
hit your Toys R Us, your Targets. It'll hit there for $70 or so, and it'll hit living rooms and children's bedrooms everywhere.
Before I let you go, didn't we have one of these 40 years ago? Isn't it called the theremin?
The theremin. Yeah, the theremin never made the duck quacking noise, if I recall. Or that. Your theremin can't do that.
We're done. Kevin Pereira, G4 Television, Attack of the Show is where you can find him on the TV set. You find him here on the radio. Kevin, thanks.
Thank you, Kai.
Oh, my God.
You want to play the death metal?
All right, we'll play death metal. Believe me when I tell you, gang, you have to check this thing out to appreciate it. We've got some links for you on our website. It is marketplace.org.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, managing a wide range of tax-exempt portfolios. Details at putnam.com. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication.
This final note to send us off into the Memorial Day weekend. If you're hosting the barbecue on Monday, you might want to set out that tip jar because it's not only gas that's more expensive. The Associated Press tallied up its shopping cart and ran the numbers. A pack of hot dogs is up 7% over a year ago. Soda and chips are up more than 10% apiece. Buns will cost you 17% more. That's a rising price of wheat you're seeing there, of course. Beer? I don't know, but my own, purely anecdotal findings are that a six-pack's up like a buck from a year ago if you're buying the good stuff. And that is Marketplace on this Friday before Memorial Day from American Public Media. Today, the Dow dropped 145 points, 1.1%. The NASDAQ fell 19 points, 0.8%. The S&P 500 slipped 18 points, that's 1.3%. Our theme music was composed by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Celeste Wesson. The executive producer of the program is a guy named J.J. Yule. Coming up on Monday, first-time homebuyers see an upside to an ailing economy.
So for us, it just made sense that if we found a great home for a good price, that we should buy as soon as possible.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Have yourself a great weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.